You are listening to another edition of the Block Report with the Minister of Information, J.R. Today we're going to be talking to Black Panther political prisoner and world-renowned writer Mumia Abu-Jamal, live from Pennsylvania's death row. He will be talking to us about his views on modern-day journalism and its role in our movement. Check it out.
All right, well, just kicking it off, what are some of the latest developments in your case?
This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording.
We're in the Court of Appeals. That's the highest level of federal court. And we're in the first stage of some briefs being exchanged. There are about four stages. And we should hear something by the end of this year.
What made the Black Panther newspaper the revolutionary medium of propaganda that it was?
Well, if you look at your average paper, one page, roughly 50 to 70 pages, have the voice of the people, the so-called letters to the editor. In the Panther paper, the Black Panther, for the most part, almost every article came from a party member, a supporter, or a community person who wrote, you know. And these people could write from literally cities all across the country because there were 44 chapters and branches. The newspaper staff actually wrote few of the pieces, and maybe 2% of the paper, usually the centerfold, featured a piece by a central committee member like Huey or Eldridge or Elaine Brown. The paper was written by grassroots black people, so it represented their interests, not the corporate interests, as does the bourgeois press that we see today.
The Black Panther Party had the newspaper, and the POCC had the baby on the Block Report. What is the importance of the people having their own unfiltered voice?
The importance is that when people speak for themselves and they hear other people speak about something that they know is true, it empowers them, it strengthens them, you see. The corporate media, their job is not to truly inform the people. Their job is to do two things: to protect the interests of their class, this class system, and also to make money. So you see them news today, straight up hustling. I mean, they'll show you what the latest movie is. You can see that on any channel, so-called news channels or not. Every news program, they'll tell you what the movies is. They'll tell you, you know, how to make your skin clearer, how to lose weight, you know, all this BS. But there might have been a demonstration two blocks away from the news headquarters, and they won't cover that if the demonstration is against the state or against imperialism or against racism, something like that. The corporate media serves their class interest. And when you have independent media, truly independent, you know, we didn't have, for most of the years that the Black Panther was publishing, we didn't do advertising, you see? You didn't have whole pages of ads by the business class. So it's very, very different from almost anything you see today.
How does corporate media affect the world in these days of globalized media?
Corporate media, being the mouthpiece of its class, affects everything. I mean, when you think about the power of the media, I'm reminded of a saying by Eldridge Cleaver. He used to say, information is the raw material for new ideas. When you get misinformation, you get some pretty effed up ideas. And think about what recently happened. As recent as the spring of 2002 and 2003, when the state and the media led the people, the army, into this war based on a lie. Now, believe me, the editors of the big papers, the news directors of the radio stations, the managing editors of the TV shows, news shows, they knew this was a BS war. They knew that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. But they were following orders. And I don't mean from the White House. I mean by their corporate bosses. The media today is more consolidated among fewer people than at any time in the history of this country. So they're able to control like they couldn't do back in...
This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Like they couldn't do back in the 70s and 60s, you see, because you had more diverse ownership. I mean, think about this. How many truly black-owned radio stations do you have today? Most of them are owned by big corporate entities like Clear Channel. If you think about what happened right after the war, Clear Channel sent an order all throughout its over 1,000 radio stations telling people what to play and what not to play. And anything perceived as radical, like Rage Against the Machine, they were just taken off the playlist. That's the power of corporate media. It controls how people see the world.
How does coverage of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan compare with coverage that was given to the Vietnam War?
Well, the only difference in my mind when I think about both is time. You know, it took years, over a decade, for the press to even begin to critique the Vietnam War. In the Iraq War, it took about 2 to 3 years. That's the difference. But there's also similarities, and they're chilling. The major media ignored and whitewashed massacres then, back in Vietnam, and now, in the Iraq War. And if it weren't for anti-war journalists in Vietnam, Seymour Hersh, who then worked for a small anti-war newsletter, and Ron Ridenour, we never would have heard of the My Lai massacre. That's where U.S. troops slaughtered some 500 women, children, and old men, and cows and dogs, shot them down in a ditch. The Haditha massacre in Iraq happened in November 2005. It took 6 months for the news to come out. Now news comes about a U.S. military conspiracy to rape an Iraqi woman in a town called Mahmoudiya. Rape and murder, in fact. I mean, think about that. And in Haditha, Hamdaniya, Mahmoudiya, we still see the corporate press trying to justify these atrocities as so-called done under the fog of war. So things have changed, and in some ways they haven't changed, and that's a shame.
Che Guevara, the Cuban Revolution, said that the propagandist is as important as the guerrilla. How do you feel about that statement?
Well, I think about it like this. Again, media either serves the corporate interests or it serves the popular interests or the people's interests. But it can't serve both. Think of this. U.S. media at its highest levels, as I said, knew that the Iraq War was BS. Yet they not only allowed it, they cheered it on. I mean, think about how every newscast opened up, you know, with this martial music, you know, war on Iraq. You know, those cheers, they were cheering an illegal war and an occupation of a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. They served as the propaganda arm of the oil companies, the defense industries, the White House, which led to the deaths of some 150,000 Iraqis at least, some 2,500 Americans. You know, so in a sense, propagandists, in this sense, the corporate press, are more dangerous than the guerrillas. You know. So people need to understand the power, as Eldredge said, of information, the power that the media can do to create misinformation and create more independent news outlets. The internet is helpful in some respects, but in terms of reaching broad, deep numbers of people, there has to be other alternatives.
As one of the biggest known black revolutionary journalists, that's definitely operating in the market right now. Who are some of the revolutionary media makers that you are inspired by?
I go way back to the ancestors, old heads before my time. Like Frederick Douglass, he was the editor of the North Star. You know, of course, he was an escaped slave who waged war against the slaveocracy with his pen. He was a fierce, unrelenting critic of Lincoln. You know, think about then, and then think about how supine and servile the press is today, black or white. My other inspiration is Eldredge Cleaver. You know, he was the first editor of the Black Panther newspaper back when it was a newsletter. He was a former minister of information. He was a man who, in my opinion, wrote and spoke with fire. Then there's Ida B. Wells Barnett. She was a crusading journalist who received death threats because she challenged the racist lynchings of black men and women in the earliest part of the 20th century. So Those were revolutionary journalists in their time, and they inspire me and should inspire young people.
This call is from a correctional institution and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Those were crusading journalists who inspired me and should inspire young people who want to become journalists.
Do you have any final statements for this interview?
No, I want to thank the Block Report for this opportunity. It is rare enough to talk to, you know, really young people who are part of the hip-hop nation or trying to find a way out of this hellhole of black life in the U.S. And it's my honor to talk to young brothers and sisters like yourself.
You was just listening to the voice of political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal on the Block Report with the Minister of Information, JR. This particular piece was produced by the Minister of Information, JR, and Prison Radio. To get in touch with the Block Report, you can email us at blockreportradio@yahoo.com. Free them all.